Well, hello, friends. This is John Noyes filling in for Greg Kokel. And if you found us, you found us during our second hour here at Stand to Reason. And we've come together at a very interesting time to talk about some very interesting issues and topics. And I so appreciate the calls from the last hour and people's honesty and willingness to talk about hard issues and then let the gospel weigh heavy on them. So it's an absolute privilege to be here with you guys. And, you know, I actually, up front, let me give the phone number to see if anybody wants to give us a call. It's 855-243-9975. And I'm here with you live from 4 to 6 today. When I say today, I mean today as in Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. So if you're listening to this on podcast, I'm sorry, I'm not live, but Greg is always live here Tuesdays from 4 to 6. And if you're international and you're somewhere overseas, you can give us a call too. Make sure you dial 1-562-424-8229. And, you know, I'd kind of like to continue a conversation, and it ties into what I was talking about the last half hour about ultimately love and more specifically the love expressed by Jesus, perfect, selfless love, self-sacrificial love. But I'm also going to continue a conversation on something that Greg brought up a few weeks back and something that's close to me, something that's been on my mind in recent months and something that I've been wrestling with. And I've actually had the opportunity to share some of this information, some of this in a talk I do to audiences. And that has to do with the topic of suicide. And I think that this is a very serious topic. It's totally worth our time. And, you know, Greg, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, addressed the question, can a Christian commit suicide? And I really encourage you to go back and listen to that podcast, because this is a question that when I present on suicide across the country, this is one of the main, probably 2 or 3 questions I get. You know, can a Christian commit suicide and go to heaven? And Greg does a wonderful job talking about that issue. But I want to talk about something, maybe pull things back a little bit for you. And you know, right now there's a lot going on in the news. We talked about it last hour, and life for many of us is so hard. It's so hard. And there's a lot of people who struggle with suicide. And I think that's a main point that I'd like to bring up. The reason why Greg spent some time addressing this issue, it's not because nobody's struggling with it. You know, a lot of us are, a lot of people, especially right now. Did you guys actually know, and my statistics might be 2 weeks old, but currently there's almost an equal number of people who have died from COVID-19 that have taken their own lives. So, and when we let this weigh heavy on us, I think we can kind of start understanding the importance of discussing this issue, that it's not just this thing that only a few struggle with. You know, according to the CDC, guys, according to the CDC, suicide rates have climbed 30% in the last 20 years. And if you're reading the newspapers and keeping your eye out for articles regarding suicide, you'll see that right now suicide's spiking. And I think that we can all come to theories as to why that's happening, why that's important. You know, especially when we consider the fact that we've all been kind of held up in our homes, the world around us is not as it ought be. Although the Christian worldview, I want to make sure that we say this, the Christian worldview is the only worldview that actually makes sense of everything that's going on right now. But I think it's important to understand that that suicide's more common than many of us would like to think. And it's important because and I'm going to get like super personal with you guys right now. If you've thought about committing suicide, I want you to know, or even if you've had friends who have thought about suicide, and that goes for your Christian friends or your non-Christian friends, I want you to know that you're not alone, that there's help. Call the National Suicide Hotline and get that help, but you are definitely not alone. You might feel like you're not alone, but you aren't. And I know this from personal experience because actually before I came on the Stand to Reason full time, I was a pastor at Living Oaks Church in Southern California. And actually my first call for help as a pastor 6 or 7 years ago was with a mom and a dad who were calling for advice as their adult son locked himself in his bedroom and threatened to take his own life. And I was, I mean, you talk about overwhelmed and feeling ill-prepared and unequipped. I was right there. And at that moment I said, I'm going to try to equip myself. And it doesn't actually start there for me. In 2011, my cousin Derek, he took his own life. And it was tragic and still has ripple effects that go through my family, if not every day, often enough, you know. And then actually what's interesting, and I guess not interesting, just very sad, is in June, this a year ago right now, this month, one of my dear friends, Stephen, he took his own life and left behind a beautiful little boy and a beautiful wife. And it was interesting, because I say interesting because I was prepping this this talk I do, and when I got this call, and I don't know what God was doing in that, maybe equipping me to offer some advice or be a light. But the main point I take from this is that you see that this issue touches us all. It has me and many of you listening right now. I think it probably has touched you, whether it be yourself struggling with depression or just thoughts of suicide or your friends, you know. So and I want to be clear up front too. Friends, I don't come to this conversation today right now with you as a trained apologist. I don't come as a pastor or theologian or an expert really in anything. I'm just being upfront with you. I come to you today as a human being who's been affected by this issue, as a human being who just loves other human beings. Why? Because, well, we're made in the image of God. The great equalizer is what I said last hour. I just want to let you know that there's people that want to help you. There's a lot of people who have been affected by this, if you're wrestling with it. And even if you're not, that we can raise our awareness to this issue because of the statistics, which I won't bore you with. But, you know, and one of the things that actually early on in preparing for this issue, some people were actually asking, you know, is suicide an apologetics issue? You know, why are we even addressing this? Well, you know, I think that it is because it's a major force in our culture. I think did you guys know it's the number two cause of death for those aged 10 to 34? It's an issue just as much as I'd say euthanasia or abortion are issue. And it's very similar to those issues because we don't often, or at least in the past, certainly we didn't even talk about these issues. You know, we just kind of let them sit in the dark corners of even our churches. And it's not until we bring them out into the light and then expose them that I think that, ultimately lives are saved. You know, I think it's important that we let these kinds of issues break our hearts and move towards them with the truth of who we are, according to the true story of reality. We've got to allow the compassion and love for other people that we talked about last hour to lead the way as we pursue the answers to the questions everyone's asking. You know, and for now, in just the next, I don't know, gosh, 10 minutes maybe, I'd just like to just bring up one of the questions, which is why. Why do people contemplate suicide? You know, some of the reasons that I've, through my research and reading and interaction with people, you know, some of the reasons could be that there's a closing in of circumstances in one's life and that these people, you just can't take it anymore. You know, sometimes that closing in of the circumstances comes by financial needs. Sometimes it's relational. Sometimes it's substance use and abuse. They factor in as well. You know, the reasons that we sometimes get are anger, jealousy, you know, depression, pride, self-pity, guilt. Sometimes it's revenge or escape from pain or loneliness, rejection. You know, sometimes people turn to suicide because they've lost status or power. You know, and when you read the literature, the list goes on as to why people contemplate suicide. But ultimately, I think that the answer to this question, why, finds its beginning in a lie that people believe. And the lie is that somehow you're better off dead than you are alive. But then why do they think that, right? So I am a skeptic. I ask questions. I ask this why question probably too much. It's amazing I'm still married. But I wrestle deep with these things. So why do people think that? Why would anybody ever think that they're better off dead than alive? And ultimately, it boils down to, in my experience and in what I'm reading, that they've lost hope in this life. And why have they lost hope? You know, the answer to this, that's a worldview question. You know, Christians and non-Christians alike, and I want to be clear with this, Christians and non-Christians both struggle with this. They both lose hope. Now, maybe sometimes for different reasons, but I think oftentimes there's a correlation, there's a similarity as to why they lose hope, you know, and I'd like to just draw this out. You know, I think the when we're talking about this why question, I think the first thing that comes to people's minds in answering this question is mental illness, right? When I first thought of suicide, or when I'm struggling with this, and I've had multiple friends die by suicide, my mind goes to, oh, well, they were mentally ill. But that didn't always fit the scenario. They weren't all depressed. They weren't schizophrenic. They weren't diagnosed as ill in any way. And actually, when I start digging into the statistics, you know, 54% of people who die by suicide haven't been diagnosed with a mental illness. I think it's a factor, yes, but when we look at the data, it's not the only factor, certainly, and it's also, I don't even think, the major factor necessarily. You know, at the same time, during the last 20 years, we've seen studies done. We've seen huge strides made in medical advances where we're able to treat anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, multiple personality disorder, and really just about anything else more effectively than at any time in history. We've made huge advances in this. Today, we have a better understanding of how the brain works than we've ever had. You know, yet suicide rates continue to climb. They continue to rise. You know, with these advances in science, medicine, and technology, shouldn't we expect to see a dramatic decrease? You know, I think so, but we're not. So I think that we need to look more deeply at this issue. And as I have taken that kind of deep dive, it's become clear to me that as the Judeo-Christian influences wane in our culture, suicide rates have skyrocketed. There's been a shift of ideas, and ideas have consequences, as we all know. I mean, we say that all the time here at Stand to Reason. Ideas matter. Worldviews matter. You know, I think in many regards, Christian and non-Christian alike, I think that we've been heavily influenced by naturalism. And let me be clear on what I mean by naturalism, and I'm going to use it in a more broad sense, and I'm going to use it kind of you know, you might call it materialism or physicalism, and I'm going to use those terms synonymous for my purposes. And I understand that there's some differences in them when you boil them down. But you know, naturalism is simply the view that everything that exists is the physical realm, and everything happens by purely naturalistic processes. I love this quote. One atheist says this. Sagan says this. The nitrogen in our DNA, the calcium in our teeth, the iron in our blood, the carbon in our apple pies were made in the interiors of collapsing stars. And most of us know this part. We're made of star stuff. You know, we're a random quantification of molecules dancing to our DNA. Meat suits in motion is my favorite saying. You know, this stuff matters. Why I'm talking about this, because our worldview influences how we answer the most fundamental questions of life, questions of meaning, purpose, identity, morality, destiny. You know, and on this view, naturalism, I think it's hard to see how anything at all can have meaning, including people. And how do we answer the questions of meaning and purpose if everything that ever was or will be is just matter in motion? It's just star stuff. From where do we derive hope? And why love, as we were just talking about? You know, and in this, and one of the callers last hour, he brought this up, and I thought it was a great point. And we kind of discussed in accordance to the moral argument that we have help in atheists as they say things. And at least when they're communicating their worldview consistently, William Provine is he's now dead, but he was a professor at Cornell. Very smart man, and he was candid when he said this: no gods, no life after death, no ultimate foundation for ethics, no ultimate meaning in life, and no human free will are deeply connected to an evolutionary perspective. You know, Dawkins, too, you know, we all know who Richard Dawkins was, and at least he was honest when he made the point: in a universe of electrons and selfish genes, blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. He says that the universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at bottom. Now, listen to this. If there is at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference. You see, as we allow naturalism to influence our culture, as even as sometimes it becomes synchronistic with our Christianity, we buy into the naturalistic ideas, the philosophies. We're told that life is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. That's from Leviathan. You know, that's from Thomas Hobbes. And we're told that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and we're told that you better get busy living or get busy dying is ultimately what we're told, you know. And now I do want to be clear here, and you can call and we can talk about this if you'd like, but I want to be clear that I'm not saying if you're an atheist or if you're a materialist that your life is meaningless or has no meaning or that you think that life is meaningless. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying you don't derive purpose for your life if you subscribe to naturalism. What I am saying, though, is that I don't think that your worldview can shoulder the burden of objective meaning and purpose. I think you have to borrow that. Frank Turek wrote a fantastic book, Stealing from God, and he discusses these things. You know, and ultimately, you know, in this loss of hope and being, when we buy into the naturalistic paradigm, that the naturalistic story of life, the search for hope finds its end in ourselves, human effort. That's where we have to turn to when there's hope. When there's no hope, we have to turn to ourselves, our own, pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps, you know, searching for hope in more education, more power, more fame, more money. But what happens when you fail? You know, you have to turn inward again. And then when you fail again, and then the cycle continues, you know, over and over and over again, friends. The cycle continues. I think that we actually see this stuff played out in real time right before our very eyes as celebrities chase the promises made by naturalism. You know, our generation has been witness to so many deaths. You know, I mean, David Carradine, you know, Robin Williams, Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade somewhat recently, Kurt Cobain a long time ago, but Junior Seau, Dave Mira, you know, more recently, Avicii, Heath Ledger, Chris Cornell, Kelly Catlin, who was a Olympic gold medalist in cycling. You know, the verse that comes to my mind when we're talking about this is from Mark 8, you know, for what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will man give in exchange for his soul? You see, sometimes we'll give everything for what we think will get us ultimate happiness. And when we get that thing that gives us ultimate happiness, ultimate fulfillment, it doesn't do what we think it'll do. And we're left empty. You see, I think naturalism, in the end, it can't deliver on the promises it makes. And at its bottom, it's a materialistic, narcissistic view of reality that leaves its proponents empty. You know, believing the lie that they're better off dead than alive, and ultimately leading them to having no hope, I think. And I think that answers a lot of the question, the why question. You know, I know these things because, and I'm just being upfront and honest with you, in the last maybe 2 or 3 minutes here before we take some calls, you know, I know these things because I tried to push the boundaries of naturalism personally. You know, I tried to live consistently within my worldview before Christ had introduced himself to me. If I'm new to you, if you haven't met me or read my bio on the str.org webpage, I was an atheist for a lot of my life until my mid to late 20s, 13 years ago. You know, and I remember, you know, I remember what it was like being a naturalist, and I remember what it was like searching for hope. I remember leaning into my atheism, my naturalism, so hard, trying to find purpose and meaning. And if I'm honest with you, even more, I as I was alone in my bed, you know, in the dark of night, I knew that there was more ultimately on this side of it. Now that God has made my hard heart, heart of flesh, I knew at the time there was more. You know, I, and this is kind of a, an illustration here. I used to work at a law firm, and before this, and I used to have an ongoing debate with one of the partners at the law firm centered around the resurrection of Jesus. And it went for 7 years back and forth, just being faithful as much as I can, praying. And towards the end of my tenure at the law firm, and we were sitting there in my office late at night, it was dark out. And I had answered, you know, probably this attorney's, 700th question about the resurrection. I said, you know what, Greg, can I just ask you one question? I've tried to answer all yours to the best of my ability. You know, when you're home at night and you're in bed and your wife's sound asleep and your kids are sound asleep and you're lying awake, do you pray? And his answer to me was yes. Yeah, he prays. And I said, well, now it's up to you to figure out like why that is and who it is that you're talking to, you know, because friends, I'm just trying to be honest and upfront with you. You know, when I leaned into my naturalism, I knew that there was something more. I just didn't want there to be something more, if that makes sense. And I was without hope, you know, but there is hope. And then ultimately, it's the hope that's available to all people. It's the hope that's found outside of ourselves and in the person and the work of Jesus Christ. It's an objective purpose and meaning to life, and it's given to us by God. It's that same hope that causes us, or should at least drive us, towards loving our neighbor, as we talked about last hour. It's that same hope that flows from a cross. You know, as we move towards a culture and going on the pattern of Jesus, following what Jesus did, you know, and hoping that we're able to just introduce that hope that's out there to people, regardless of their worldview, because everybody needs to hear this. Everybody needs to hear this. And this is the true story of reality, as Greg would say. And yeah, I think this is just an important issue. I just want to leave it with you. Maybe let it resonate for you. And in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and I'll come back with your calls. This is John Noyes for Stand to Reason.
Some people treat Christianity like it's a build your own Sunday shop. They include the bits they like and exclude the bits they don't. The problem is, truth is not ice cream. You can't build your own biblical reality like you build an ice cream sundae. You can't pick and choose the parts you prefer. Truth doesn't work like that. Truth is what matches up with reality. Sadly, there are some who are creating a version of Christianity that fits their own subjective desire rather than sound doctrine. At this year's STR Reality Conferences, you will get the tools to identify counterfeit versions of Christianity so you can guard against them. We want to show you that biblical reality isn't something we shape, rather, it's something that shapes us. So join us at one of this year's STR Reality Conferences. Discover why truth is not ice cream by visiting realityapologetics.com and registering today.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Well, good afternoon, friends. I am John Noyes. This is Stand to Reason. I'm standing in for Greg Kokel, who is on a well-deserved vacation. Although I know that he's not actually on vacation. You know that he's working right now. You know, he's probably writing or researching or correcting one of my mentor letters or doing anything else. He is one of the hardest working guys I know. And I love being here with you. And let me see, have I gotten all the announcements out of the way? Oh, you know what? There's one more announcement I love to to talk with you guys about before we get to your calls. And you can call us right now. I am live from, 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. You can call. And let me give you that number real fast. It's 855-243-9975. I would really love to hear from you. It's actually you guys who make this show so great. I love talking with you guys and hearing from you and seeing what you guys are wrestling with. But let me tell you guys right now, things have really kind of slowed down, but they're starting to pick back up, which is a good thing, as far as the COVID-19 and no traveling. And I think that actually some really interesting stuff have flowed out of this for us as a ministry. We've been doing a lot. I know I've been doing a lot of Zoom and Skype calls and Google Hangouts with people. And if you're looking to schedule one of our speakers, you know, at your church or an event that you're having, we are working hard. We are still available to you, and you can email Darcy. And this is a really simple email address, booking@str.org. That's booking@str.org. Now is a great time to do that. For as you look ahead to July and on into through the summer and into the fall, I know that I'm extremely excited. Next, 2 weeks from now, I'm driving to Utah to do an event, and I'm really excited to be out there. And then I'll be back here in LA speaking virtually at a church in Los Angeles. And I've done so many of these, and it's actually a lot of fun. Being able to work around the situation and find things that we can still do as speakers. And with that, I'd love to, let's get to Larry, who's on the line. You've been waiting for like a half hour, Larry. Are you with us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, Larry. Hey, thank you for waiting.
Yeah, no, it's been real good. I really appreciated your, the first segment with the moral argument about the right and wrong, who decides and all that. That was really good. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate that. What do you got for us today?
My question was, you mentioned in the first part of your talk about Jesus's command to love one another as he has loved him, or them, the disciples. And I had a conversation with a real good Christian friend of mine that we were talking about something, and it came about that he was saying that he treats Christians better, or I can't remember exactly, but somehow he favors Christians in helping over just anybody in general, and you mentioned that the word is used agape in both senses, that to love your neighbor as yourself, and Jesus's command to love one another. So as I have loved you. And is there any difference between those commands to love neighbors versus brothers and sisters? Because the other thing was the Good Samaritan was what I mentioned to my friend, which was that wasn't, that seemed for all of us to seem like an agape love, but I don't know. Anyway, so I just wanted your take to see, if you had any comments on the difference between those two commands.
Yeah, the good, this is a really great question and a really great distinction. It's actually a really great conversation that you're having with your friend. And I'm going to try to lay out just kind of like a chain here for you. I use the Good Samaritan to get me to what is or who is our neighbor, right? So in the Good Samaritan, we're told that basically our neighbor is everybody, right?
Right.
So our neighbor is everybody around us. It's the people that form our sphere of influence is the way that I put it. And then that gets us to Matthew 5:43, where Matthew 5:43-44, he says, you've heard, and you'll know this right when I say, if you don't know already off the top of your mind, you've heard that it was said that you should love your neighbor and hate your enemy, right? I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So, and it's really important to understand that right there, we have that equation of neighbor and love, and the love that's used there is agape. So, and it's all throughout the scriptures, of agape love. It's the same love that's used in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So when we trace the map through scripture, it's clear that we're called to love with a radical love, an otherworldly love. And that's actually one of the things that's most profound to me about kind of like what we were talking about last hour, is that the world looks on to us. You know, the world is watching us, and when we choose to live out these commandments that Jesus did, and we got to rely on Jesus to do it, don't get me wrong. And I really want to be clear, because I'm not sure I hit this well enough in the last segment, but we're never going to do it perfectly. Like, I am a fallen, broken individual, but I'm a jar of clay. And even though my jar is cracked and has fissures, there's invaluable jewels inside. And those jewels, through those cracks and fissures, this is the way I like to say it, they shine out into the world around us. And one of the expressions of that is the way that we love people. So I think if you trace the commandments, and they all reinforce each other, right? Jesus never contradicts each other. His commandments build on one another. We're called to love. Are you tracking with me?
Yeah. So far, so good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then here in that passage in John 13:34-35, I absolutely love this passage. You know what? I'm going to open my Bible here and actually turn to it, because this whole section, every time I read it, it just absolutely blows me away. So you open to John 13, and we find ourselves as Jesus is, he's in the upper room night before he's going to be crucified. And, and here he says, now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also be glorified, glorify him in him, and blah, 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 blah. A little children, I shall be with you a little while longer. He's telling his disciples, I'm going to leave. And then this is where he gives the new commandment in verse 34. Now, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. You also have loved one another. Now, this isn't one of the things I struggled with is like, why is this new? It doesn't seem new. I'm going to flip to Leviticus here. Because this commandment has actually been given to us. Jesus here is relying on Deuteronomy 6:5. You know, first you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. You know, and this is where, you know, we never are able to do this. You know, we don't reach this standard, but thank God our salvation doesn't rest on how well we do this. But it doesn't mean we don't pursue it. But then the second in Leviticus 19, it says this. This is 19:18. He says, "You shall take." And this weighs in on the situations I think that we find ourselves in right now. You know, you shall take vengeance. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So what's happening here in our passage is Jesus is taking two old commandments. He's taking an old thing, but he's making it new, because what he's saying is you know what? You've heard that said, and you've seen it modeled imperfectly because I haven't been here yet. And then he's saying, do as I do. And now he's laying down the model. He is the model, you know, so the newness of the commandment is tied to the new standard. Even as I have loved you, you're no longer to love as we love ourselves. We're to love as Jesus loves. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That helps. I might mention that, the verse that he used to, back up his argument, that was Matthew 25, the judgment 25, where the goats and the sheep, where the judgment, where he separates the sheep and the goats on different sides. And he goes through, and eventually in verse 40, he says, and the king will answer them, I tell you the truth, just as you did it for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. And my Christian friend takes his brothers and sisters as Christians. I kind of took exception with that, but he insisted, and that was his basis for that. But I think what you're telling me here is a good argument for going over with him. This is just a model for us of an old command.
Yeah, well, he's basing the new command on the old, and what's making the new command new is now we have a model in Jesus.
Right.
He's saying, okay, you didn't know how to do this perfectly, but guess what? Now that I've lived, and keep in mind the context of the passage, like he knows tomorrow he's going away. He's been telling his boys that he's going away. And now he's saying, now that I'm here, I'm almost to the end of what I came for. I've modeled this now for you. So now you actually have a very particular and precise target, you know, and he basically, as Jesus always does, right? He ups the ante. You know, he's up in the game. Now you've seen what perfect love looks like. Now go do it. And it's like, oh boy, that's hard, you know?
Okay. So. Well, what about the idea that, okay, I guess this goes along with it, is that that's how the world, by the way, we love one another. And it seems like he's talking about Christians' love for each other as opposed to our love for those in the world. It seems like, is that right or wrong?
Yeah. So there's the one another statement in there. Absolutely. But that's where we need to take Jesus's commandments and apply a whole biblical theology here. Because we're also, this is where the Good Samaritan comes in. This is where we say, well, we're not just told to love, and it's the same love used, right? So we're not just told to love each other. We're told to love our neighbor. Same way. So Jesus is telling us, yeah, sure, we love one another. You know, they will know you are my disciples by how you love one another, is what he says. But that, just because there's that one another there, doesn't negate Jesus's other teachings, mainly here, the Good Samaritan. And we're to love our neighbor in the same way that Jesus has loved everybody he came for. When Jesus loved everybody, right? So he's loving love as I have loved. And that's our model. So it's important. It's really important when we start talking about these things, not to get caught up in single commandments, but allow all of Jesus's ministry to inform what he's saying. It could take a big picture. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think, if I can summarize, at least for me, when I talk to him again, is just that for one thing, the word agape is used in both places where you're supposed to love your neighbor and your brother, agape. And so there's no real difference in that sense. And then the other idea is that Jesus was using this as himself as a model to love agape, and that includes brothers and sisters and your neighbor. And whether you're practicing agape love in the world, brothers and sisters or neighbors, whatever, the point is, it indicates or it points a light to Jesus or who we're representing, which is Jesus. So in both cases, we're still a light to the world. That's how people will know us as Christians. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds. I mean, I think I'm tracking with you. You've got to take all of Jesus's words. You got to take all of the entire Bible. And come up with a theology, you know, and then come up with a practical way of living that flows from that theology, right? So and in light of that, you know, you could just talk to your friend and say, well, we're told also, you know, so a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. And that's the one another statement, right? They will know you are my disciples by how you love one another. And those are the one another. That's within the Christian community. I don't deny that. That's absolutely true. But then you also have passages like, you know, Mark 12:31, where the, you know, he's saying to love your neighbor as yourself. No, you know, so love your neighbor as yourself. And no other commandment is greater than these, after he says to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. You know, so you're to love equally out into the community. Now, where the difficult thing in my mind gets is, how do we actually do that, and how does it manifest itself, especially in a day and an age where people have a not always a friendly reaction to what it means to be a Christian, right? When our morals and our values fly in the face of culture, it's hard to be loving, because sometimes loving isn't giving people what they want, if that makes sense. So I want to be kind of clear with that too. I'm not saying that we just love does not equal acceptance or encouragement. Love is in this is where it's important to overlay an entire systematic theology on top of these things, that we know who God is, we know who we are in Christ, and being transformed by Christ, by the renewing of our minds, we're led by love even into the hard conversations, sometimes the conversations that matter most, with the peoples who sometimes matter most in our lives. But we do it in a way, certainly in a way that's, you know, full of, you know, knowledge, wisdom, and character. Those are the three pillars of STR. You know, we want to be good ambassadors for Christ. So I hope that was helpful.
Yeah. The one thing, I think you already went over this, but just, I might've missed it, but what did you say about the idea that he said this is a new commandment, that it's new?
Yeah, so it's a new commandment. It draws from the Old Testament, right? So from Deuteronomy and Leviticus, which we went over, right? So it's coming out of the Old Testament, but it was love your, you know, let me flip to it really, really quickly here in my Bible. You'd think my Bible is 6,000 pages long. It's not. Okay. It actually might be. Leviticus, Deuteronomy says you shall love your God with all your heart, your soul, and mind. And then the second verse that I brought up to reinforce this is Leviticus 19. You shall take you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus is going to modify this. He modifies it by saying, now you love as I have loved. That's where the link comes in, and the Good Samaritan comes in to get you there.
Okay, so the modification part is what he's saying is, it's now he's kind of modified the original command. He's calling it new, but it's new in the sense that it's modified, right?
Yeah, so the newness of the commandments tied to the new standard, even as I have loved you, in from John, right? So we're no longer to love as ourselves. We're to love as Jesus loved.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. That would be new. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also like, I mean, one of the other things that makes it new is this is really the new MO, the modus operandi of a newly knit messianic community that's coming together. You know, it's not Jesus's, you know, what it's Jesus's standard that we live by, and then by his power that we live through. That makes it new. So now we have that tangible standard that we can touch and see, you know, and so he lived it out for us.
Yeah. Okay. That helps. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem, man. I'm glad that we could clear that up. It took me a little while, but I'm still new to this. So thanks for calling in, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Okay. Thanks.
All right, take care. And with that, guys, know what? I'm going to take another break here. And I'm John Noyes. This is Stand to Reason. I'll be right back with our third segment in our second hour.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
You know, if you've gained anything from listening to Stand to Reason, I'd really be thrilled to hear it from you. I love to take your questions, of course, but I also want your feedback. So here's what you can do. Head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That kind of thing really helps us to get the word out so more ambassadors for Christ can find the show and become equipped to stand confidently. And you never know, I might just give you a shout out on the air to show you my appreciation for your positive review. I value you as a faithful listener. I look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks.
Well, hello, friends. This is John Noyes with Stand to Reason, and you are listening live. It is now 5:45. We're coming up to the last 14 now minutes of the program, and I'd like to try to just leave you with some final thoughts. It's been a fast 2 hours here, and we've had some great calls, and we've talked about some heavy stuff, and then I'm hoping that we've shed some light on some hard issues. So that in turn, I don't want any of this stuff. And then this is, I think, our purpose or one of our driving factors at STR is we don't ever want this stuff just to rest as mental ascent to make you necessarily a better person. But we'd love it if you could share these insights that are given to you out in the community that God has placed around you, that sphere of influence that I was talking about earlier, and be great ambassadors, be gardeners. Right now in this time where the world so desperately needs the gospel, I mean, it always needs the gospel, but right now I'm just thinking of how can I reach out into my community with what I have available to me in a way that's authentic, that's a way that's real, discussing real and hard issues with people I love, and shed some maybe light and give some people some hope, and in the process maybe solve some issues. You know, much of the stuff that we're talking about today ultimately has to do with the problem of evil. I'm just going to say it. You know, there's evil in the world, and that's part of living in a fallen and a broken world. And this is actually all this stuff. Like if I was an atheist, still an atheist living at this time, and there may be some atheists right now listening even, I would have been throwing this stuff that's going on in the face of Christians, repeatedly. Certainly if Facebook was around 13 years ago, 14 years ago, or Twitter or any of these, I would be up in arms on where's your God now? And I'd just like to briefly just kind of talk about this stuff with you, because I think that we actually have a real solution to this problem. And in raising the issue, actually, I think the atheist is highlighting a problem with their worldview, you know. And before we do this, I want to qualify this, because right now may not be the time to have a conversation with somebody intellectually about the problem of evil. You know, you might not want to give them the logical problem of evil, and right now might be the time to lean in and address it from an emotional standpoint, meaning you just come alongside people. You know, and like I said at the first hour, you know, you love on them. But when I say that when I say the logical problem of evil, I mean, it's a formal argument, you know, an omnibenevolent God would want to eliminate evil, an omnibenevolent God would be able, or an omnipotent God rather, would be able to eliminate evil, but evil exists. Therefore, God is either he's too sinister to care, or he's too weak to oppose evil, and or ultimately, God most likely just doesn't exist. And that's how I think traditionally, that's traditionally how that argument's framed for us. You know, and as I said in the first segment, or actually I think it was probably the second hour, the beginning of it, you know, I think it's important that as we enter into these issues, I like to always kind of drop the idea that I'm a professional apologist or a pastor, and I just like to approach things, man, just as a human being. You know, I like to look at people with that love that we talked about in the first hour. You know, these are real people with real issues and real objections. And oftentimes, many times, the objections, even the problem of evil, and this is the one that I would bring. This was my nail in the coffin when I was an atheist. Oftentimes, the issue that they're bringing up isn't even really really the issue. But I think when they do bring it up, when the atheist does bring it up, I think there's a good opportunity for us to defend the Christian worldview and to shine some light on where the atheist worldview kind of falls short. And the first question I ask, and I'm not going to give a formal refutation to the argument right now. I think that we've done that on this show a bunch. And, you know, some of the things that I like to ask is what is evil? You know, and this is one of the sticking points. This is one of the sticking points to me. As an atheist, as I was coming out of atheism, this is one of his, excuse me, as Greg puts it, this was one of my bumps of reality. I bumped into this really hard because I was trying to define what evil is, and I was having trouble with it, and I couldn't. Oh man, I couldn't put my finger on it because it was very clear that evil existed. Excuse me. But it's not something in the same sense that I can't like walk into 7-Eleven and buy a bag of evil. You know, it doesn't exist in matter. You know, it's not a thing. It's not stuff. You know, so that means to me, and this is something I wrestled with, that meant that God couldn't have created it. You know, evil, it became very clear to me as I was wrestling that there is evil in the world, right? We all know it when we see it. We can point to it. We can say that's evil. But I couldn't define it, you know, until I thought I put on the perspective that it's actually, and let's see if this makes sense to you. Evil is a, excuse me, I don't know how Greg does this for 2 hours, but he does, he's used to it. But evil is something. It's the privation of good. It's the absence of good. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, think of it like this. It's kind of like a shadow. It's the absence of light. That's what evil is, you know? So it is something, but it's not some thing, you know, it's the absence of good. It's like a donut hole is what I use in my presentations on evil. It's like a donut hole. You know, what does the donut hole taste like? Well, it doesn't taste like anything because it's the absence of the donut. It's what makes the donut a donut. Well, in most cases, right? So it's this round thing with a hole in the center. The hole in the center is the donut hole. You know, it's the absence of donut. You know, so evil is the departure from a perfect and good standard. And this is where I really got hung up, and this is where I'm just gonna kind of wrap things up with our time together. If it's the absence of something, if it's the absence of a standard, that means there has to be a standard giver. So as an atheist, I used to wrestle with this stuff, and I understand there's a conversation to be had. This isn't simply this neat and tidy thing. It very, very rarely is. But if it's the absence of a departure from a perfect standard of good, where are we getting that perfect standard of good? I think of it like bowling. You know, my brother growing up used to be a bowler, you know, and 300 was the perfect score. So everybody would strive for 300, but there's a set rule system, in place so you could compare yourself against the perfect standard, 300. Well, the same is true for morality. You know, how can you tell whether an act is good or evil? It has to be measured against an objective standard or behavior. And this ultimately is God's standard of morality. That's the scoring system that we use. That's the 300 is God's standard. So, so good, I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. So good, when we say something is good, it's actually something is closer to that standard of behavior. And when we say something is bad, that action is further from that standard, you know, and evil, when we say evil, it's the absence of goodness. It's more bad. It's further away from that standard. And right now, guys, right now, when we look at the world around us, we see evil. We do. Nobody's denying that. Just like the argument, you know, just like as an atheist, when I was wrestling with this intellectual argument, you know, the third premise that there's evil in the world was true for me. And then everybody sees that right now, but now it's up to us to say, okay, well, what is evil and how are we defining that? And it's a good way. This is just a good thing that you guys might be able to use to enter into conversations and like I said before with somebody who called earlier, you know, sometimes right now isn't maybe the time to tackle the apparent issue at hand. Right now, we might want to sit back and be wise and careful with our words. Right now, we might want to help generate more light than heat. And the way that we can do that is asking good questions and trying to point out, yes, this thing is wrong, but why is it wrong? Especially with our unbelieving friends, you know, we can ask them, why is it wrong? Where are you getting that standard of wrongness from? And then in the process, guys, it helps us move towards our neighbors and helps us move through these really hard issues. And it helps us reflect and be reflect the light of Christ, but be ambassadors for Christ, which is what we're all about here at Stand to Reason. So I hope that's helpful. I know it might be a little bit convoluted because I'm just trying to shed some light on a hard topic right now. But I hope it's helpful as you engage the world around you. And as Greg says, you know, I love it. He says, give them heaven. And that's what we want to do. We want to be ambassadors for heaven, ambassadors for Jesus. And guys, I am so appreciative of you guys tuning in here to Stand to Reason during our time together. And until next time, I'm John Noyes, filling in for Greg. And this is Stand to Reason.